Dogs make the best companions for humans. This podcast aims to help make humans better companions for their dogs. Welcome to the Beru Podcast, a modern lifestyle podcast for dogs and their people. I'm your host, Charlotte Bain. I've been caring for other people's dogs for more than 15 years. And while I've learned a lot in my career, I definitely don't know it all. So I've collected an ever-evolving roster of amazing dog people, and I learn new things from them all the time. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the Beru Podcast. In this episode, I have a lovely and fun chat with best-selling author W. Bruce Cameron and his partner in love and all things dog, Catherine Michon, an award-winning comic, actress, improviser, screenwriter, and author. We chat about the inspiration behind the incredibly successful trilogy of A Dog's Purpose novels and films, and we get real about dog loss, dog love, and some of the most important gifts our dogs can bring us. And we chat about so much more. So let's jump in.
Hi, we're here.
Hi.
I have a question.
Yeah.
These are beautiful dogs.
Oh my God.
These can't all be your dogs though, right?
They are not my dogs. So I've been caring for dogs and working with dogs for, almost 15 years. So yeah, that's one of my crews. Yep.
Okay. Well, they're a good crew. They're very happy.
The one in the middle there on the with the three, that one's mine. The little mutt in the mix. Yeah, that one's mine.
I love the way the dogs on your left are all paying attention to. Obviously, there's a treat somewhere involved. Yeah. So that's what they're paying attention to. They're not looking at the camera.
And then the other three are like camera ready. Yeah, I know. That's why I love that picture so much. Yeah, because it's like not perfect. Yeah,
those are the pro dogs.
It's true. All right. So I guess my first question is, you guys have found such tremendous success with the Dog's Purpose trilogy and all the wonderful books that you have for young readers and all the many other books, too many to count. I guess my first question really is was this something that you envisioned for yourself or being a writer? And was the road to success super smooth or were there a lot of challenges along the way?
It was super smooth. Yeah. I don't know what we'll talk about for an hour. It was easy. Everyone should do it.
People keep ringing the doorbell and thrusting handfuls of cash at us. I don't understand it.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
So Catherine was a writer of renown in television before I met her. Mm-hmm. And then she had expanded into writing a book. She wrote a memoir. Awesome. And was in the process of writing a novel when I first encountered her. We met each other on a talk show.
Oh my God, so, really?
Yeah, we were actually, it's kind of funny, we were both on book tour and I had written my memoir and he had written a wonderful book called 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter.
Mm-hmm, yep.
So anyway.
But so I had envisioned that I was just going to write humor books until eventually I thought I would evolve into novels and I thought they would be thrillers. But it didn't happen that way because of Catherine, because we were driving up to meet her parents. So we had gotten to the point in the dating thing where you meet the parents, which is, which is a really odd thing to do when you're no longer a teenager.
Right. Quickly. Yeah. I mean, did it for a few years and I was like, oh Jesus. All right. Might as well,
Yeah. Looks like this thing's going to last after all, despite all of her friends saying, yeah, you can do that. So we're driving up and Catherine, just a tiny bit of background. She had never had a dog growing up, but she had one when she was married to her first husband. And the dog had passed very suddenly and unexpectedly. And so she wasn't prepared for that grief that is overwhelming when you lose a pet. And she just turns to me out of the blue and says, you know what? I can't go through that again. I will never have another dog. Mm. And I'm thinking, okay, Already, I was feeling reluctant because I was going to meet her parents.
Right.
And now, on top of it, hearing this deal breaker of an announcement, which suggests that I should let her out at the next gas station and then go back to LA. But it didn't work out that way because I decided we stopped for coffee. And instead of driving away, I decided to stick it out, and I made up a story because that's kind of what I do when I want to make a point is I make up a story, and I decided to make up a story that would convince her that the love that she had with her first dog was there for her in other dogs if she would just open her heart. And so she comes out, and I start telling her this story about
we're just driving up the 101.
Right. Yeah.
And I start telling her the story of a reincarnating dog who remembers life and in the process learns lessons that eventually lead the dog to be able to go back to his original boy and essentially save his original boy. And and Catherine liked the story so much, she married me.
Yeah. What a good boyfriend.
We got on the 101. I mean, that's
yeah, we waited. But at some point, she said to me, you have to write that as your next book.
Yeah. I mean, it was such a profound story. And although Bruce is a person who likes to make up a story to make a point, this was unusual. And I have always felt like it might have been he was, in a way, channeling something that might universally be true, or something that I believe universally to be true, which is that we're always connected to these both animal souls and people souls, who pass. And it was very profound. And honestly, how many books have you written now?
Well, I've published 33.
I cannot keep track.
I tried to count and I couldn't.
Yeah. So he's published 33, which means we have two more in the wings right now.
Oh, good.
But I really think that this is the only book you've ever written that came to you so fully formed. I mean, I can tell you as the only person who heard it, something that became a worldwide franchise and has become had movies all over the world and whatnot, that it really was kind of the whole book. Like,
he was just channeling it right then and there.
And Hannah and the working German Shepherd and all of this was in that initial telling of the story.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, she was sobbing. And then she said,
"Right before you met her parents, I'm terrified.
I'm terrified you're going to forget it. So you need to record it." At that time, I recorded everything into a digital recorder, like a stick.
Yeah.
And so she made me do it again, like it was
it was this one man show. Yeah.
I'll be here all week. And so I did it, and went
Wait,
through
was
the
this
whole
still
thing
on
again.
In the car on the way up there, or no? This
yeah,
is, okay, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. It is California.
True.
And so I recorded the whole thing again, and she's crying at the end, and then she pointed to me and she says, "I don't want to hear this story again until you've written it."
Yeah, I've had enough for the day.
Yeah.
Would you watch the movie A Dog's Purpose twice in one day? Probably not.
Right. Yeah, I feel like when you're really like in alignment with that was kind of your purpose, right?
Yeah.
I mean, right then and there in that moment, like it just kind of like it just flows, right? Whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, he's such a gifted storyteller, and it's been such a pleasure to be the co-screenwriter on these three movies, adapting his work.
How was that working together?
It was great. I mean, in our personal relationship, we both had, I had gotten a contract from HarperCollins to write a novel, and I'd never written a novel before. And he had a contract from Disney to write a screenplay. And it was sort of like we were able to try each other out as colleagues, because he knows how to write a novel and I know how to write a screenplay. And so we kind of tutored each other through that. And in that process, found that we collaborated very well. So it was kind of a really lucky way to try out being in a personal relationship and a professional relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how people do it. If they're not, you know, they can't put down their pens and make out every once in a while.
That helps. That's very helpful.
Yeah, I mean, writing partners, and they don't do that.
So awkward. But it's like, we also went to a marital, well, relationship. We weren't married at the time. A therapist that we both trust, and just worked out a set of ground rules, which honestly, I don't think you even any kind of business partnership, I think people should go to an outside mediator or therapist or somebody to set the ground rules for any business partnership. Because if you think about it, if you have a business partnership of two people, if you have a stalemate, you have a broken partnership, right?
Right.
If you can't agree, then the whole thing falls apart.
Right.
Right.
So we,
whereas marriages are the opposite.
Oh, that all works out great. No, that's easy. That part's easy.
So, yeah. So we came up with a working framework that has worked for us very well ever since. And, you know, Catherine taught me how to write a screenplay. I didn't really know what I was doing. And, you know, writing a novel is so much, there's so much freedom, because if I turn in a novel and it's 75,000 words, 95,000 words, no, I don't get a phone call saying, "Oh, wait, you screw this up." But if you turn in a screenplay that's even just a few pages too long, you've lost. I mean, as far as they're concerned, you don't know what you're doing. So it's really difficult.
Then Gavin will yell at you.
Yes. And then Gavin Pallone, who's great in every way, except for the fact that he wants to follow all these rules. Like, you can't have a 4-hour movie. I'm like, why? But it's about dogs.
People love it. We'll have bathroom break.
Bathroom break. You part one, part two. That's great. Well, in alignment with that, was there like a lot of pushback from the studios, like trying to bring that into fruition, trying to bring the novels into fruition?
Well, I don't want to make this the Gavin Pallone worship hour, but we were so lucky because Gavin is such an experienced producer, and he had deep respect for the original voice of Bruce's novels, and so he really guided us through all of that with the studios. And for all three movies, it was a really good collaborative process, and we made three movies that we really like. So you know, in terms of Hollywood stories, usually end in lawsuits and everyone hating everyone. We had a very blessed journey. And it's really because of Gavin, who wouldn't like me using that word, but blessed is actually blessed. The word he wouldn't like, but,
Hashtag blessed. Yeah, got it.
Yeah. That's why we had, you know, such a great adventure. And then of course, just the natural world that we were shooting in. So for example, for A Dog's Way Home, we literally were shooting on the side of Whistler Mountain. We had to be snowmobiled into set. Bruce always jokes because the dogs on our movie are actually the ones that get treated like divas. Yeah. You know, we're huddled in a tent.
Yeah, the writers are there, but it was so cold. The hard drive on my laptop froze. And
literally froze.
Yeah, literally. It broke. And he said, "Well, you can't expose your laptop to sub-zero temperatures." I'm like, "Well,
nobody told me."
Yeah.
You're not supposed to expose the screenwriters to sub-zero temperatures. But guess what? The dog is over there. He's got two heat. She's got two heat lamps on her. She's being massaged, being fed, you know.
He's a working actor.
She's a star.
She's the star.
Did you guys have a say in the casting process of who? Did you have a say in who? Did you meet the dogs first, or were they?
Yeah, more so on that particular movie because we set out. Gavin offered up a challenge to Sony, and they happily accepted, was that could we make this movie and have the star of the movie, the dog that plays Bella, be a rescue dog?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's a very it's more expensive because we had to bring on dog team earlier to take this young dog who had been living in a garbage dump in outside of Nashville, Tennessee.
Way outside,
out in the woods, rescued by this small municipal shelter way out in the backwoods. And the thing was that, and Gavin and I actually were kind of, he was kind enough to let me be involved because I'm a film director also.
Yeah.
We were searching on Pet Finders. We were searching for dogs that were rescued that looked like the dog on the cover of the original first edition book of A Dog's Way Home. And I'm very picky. And I had this idea that I was hoping for a dog that had what I called eyeliner, like was already in hair and makeup, had that look, which the dog on the cover had. And then with Shelby, who was the rescue dog, she also had this amazing white blaze on her chest that's really beautiful. But then it has to be also, is this a dog that can be trainable? Is she food and play motivated? And
so
we flew, Bruce and I, with Teresa Miller, who trained her for the film, although Debbie Pearl owns the company and that's who Shelby lives with now. But anyway, Teresa came and, ran her through some basic tests that those kind of high level trainers can do with a dog to see if it's
I failed every one of them. Shelby did okay.
Although you're pretty food motivated.
I'm definitely food motivated. There's no question about that.
I understand that you get a prize at the end of it. But anyway, so she passed with flying colors and, literally went from being a junkyard dog to being a movie star. And she still stars in commercials.
Yeah, I see her all the time on like Target commercials.
I directed her in a Target commercial.
That's right.
Actually. So she's
that's so cool.
So we're really proud of that. And that was, we've used a lot of rescue dogs on all the movies, but that particular experience of being allowed to have, and if you look at that movie, she's in almost every scene of the movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So she really was the star of the show. You know, it was more spread out with the other two movies because of the dogs, reincarnating all the time. So different dogs. We're not asking you to play a husky when you're a chihuahua. We're not going to.
That would be inappropriate.
Right.
Unfair. So we're really proud because we think that really sets a standard for what can be accomplished with animal actors in live action, that you can actually take a dog who was in the wild basically and turn her into a beautiful, happy, working actress dog.
It's really fun for me to tell school children. I speak a lot. I go to a lot of elementary and middle schools to talk to the kids because I've got, a couple of children book series. And I tell them about adopting Shelby and I describe their eyes grow so wide when I say we would pass houses and there were no electrical wires running to the houses because they don't have electricity. And then we would pass houses where there was a little building in the front yard because that's their bathroom. And the children are just stunned silent. Mm-hmm. And then they live in the Palisades and the chauffeur comes to pick them up. And they're like, I just don't understand. Why didn't they have their driver build them a bathroom? I don't know. It's like that.
Regardless, this was a good example. This is the backwoods of Tennessee. These people, it was a municipal shelter. It wasn't even able to be a rescue, but they had formed a rescue in conjunction with the shelter. And in the backwoods of Tennessee, where people are not as rescue oriented, they managed to never destroy an adoptable animal for 7 years out of that municipal shelter, which is a remarkable record.
Yeah.
And so what we really learned and saw is that all over America, that people are doing this work on the ground, grassroots.
Yeah.
Creating that consciousness of how to be responsible pet owners and find, rescue dogs their forever homes. And it was very moving to us.
Absolutely. I interviewed the Senior Dog Sanctuary in Joliet, Tennessee. I don't know.
I don't know that place, but it sounds great.
Yeah, they take they only take dogs from Tennessee and seniors and, because people often relinquish their seniors because they end up costing so much money. And the resources aren't there. And so they end up taking them and either placing them in homes near there, only in Tennessee, or just keep them on their beautiful sanctuary where they can live out the rest of their lives. It's so sweet.
That's amazing. I love that. Well, we just were really blown away by these people. And then at one point we flew two of the people that worked at the shelter. We had a private red carpet event for the film and we flew them out and we did makeover fun, you know, red carpet stuff and had this big party and they got to see Shelby again, which is really what they wanted. They didn't care so much probably about putting on an evening gown and a tux, but they were very excited.
Still fun.
It was a great reunion where they got to see her again and meet her in her full movie star glory, which, you know, she was pretty different. She could stand on a red carpet for hours and, you know, is like a public working dog, so different than the really puppy that they rescued. So,
how old was she when they found her?
You know, she wasn't a puppy, but
she was between 1 and 2 years old by my estimation. And I don't have the science for it, but that it really seems.
Yeah. But she was young.
Yeah, she's young. She's still pretty spry. I mean, it's been several years, but we see her all the time. Catherine sings in a choir that visits VA hospitals and children's hospitals at Christmas time.
Well, not in COVID, but yeah.
Okay. Well, that messed everything up. Yeah.
and Shelby shows up for those things.
Yeah. Shelby, that first year in 2019, she, just before the movie opened, she came to the Westwood VA and, you know, greeted all the people there and they just loved her and she's so easy to love and it was a beautiful event.
That's so sweet. Yeah, such great work you guys are doing.
Well, I'm a try. Did you
So do you have a dog now? I think you do.
Oh my gosh. Right? Yes. We have Tucker. Who is
what kind of dog is Tucker?
Yeah, so he's Bruce always describes him as 24 pounds of suspect DNA. He's, you know, he's a mutt. He's a rescue. But he's 12.
Oh, wow.
He's actually the dog that, after he told me this story, I became open to adopting a dog. He's like the love child of a dog's purpose, I guess. And he's amazing. Bruce's daughter runs a rescue in Denver called Life is Better Rescue. And she rescued him. And one of their specialties is taking dogs that are kind of doomed in municipal shelters. And why don't you tell Tucker's story? Because it's
That one morning, the first person on the scene at the municipal shelter finds a cardboard box on the front steps and opens it. And inside are a couple of puppies, slick from birth. Mm. They were apparently born and rejected all in the same hour. And so some heartless person loaded them in a cardboard box and just dropped them off. You know, in Denver, where it gets cold
overnight,
it gets cold at night, even in August. And they were alive, but they didn't have the resources at the municipal shelter to sit and bottle feed a puppy, which is what you have to do when they're that young. And so they called my daughter, Georgia, Life is Better, and said, "We've got these newborn pups. Can you take them?" And she says, "I don't have staff for that. But what I do have is a German Shepherd who just weaned her pups yesterday. Let's give it a shot." So they brought in this box of puppies to this German Shepherd who's lying there relieved that she's finally got it.
One more thing.
Empty nest. I love it. And then showed her what was in the box, and the mother dog just was like, "Oh, I must have had a wild weekend that I forgot about." And just lay back down, and the puppy's nurse, and that's how Tucker survived. And we have pictures of Tucker.
It's the cutest thing. So this is like a huge German Shepherd police dog looking dog. And Tucker and his brothers were like 1 pound little yellow blobs. And so I have this giant police dog with these little yellow blobs suckling at her breasts, and it's like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. That's great. It's amazing. She just like was like, okay, I guess I'm doing this now.
Yep, yeah. There we go. Times two.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, it was
pretty sweet. Does Tucker play like an active role in your writing process now? Like, do you guys turn to him for inspiration, or do you
cuddle him?
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't know understand why I don't show him as being co-author on all my books.
Right. And,
I actually ask Tucker all the time for advice on how to write from a dog's perspective. And
yeah,
from Tucker's perspective, you got the couch and you've got the chair, and then he's got his own bed. This is a dog that likes to take his naps. I don't really observe Tucker. He's a very atypical dog, Tucker is, but I grew up with dogs and we always had dogs. In fact, when my parents discovered how little they liked their own children, they had three children, they got three dogs. And so you always knew you were looking at your replacement when you were like looking at the dog in the backyard. Yeah. You're like, that's the one that replaces me.
My in-laws, they both passed and I love them a lot, but they were very, as Bruce is saying, very dog-centric, so dog-centric that at one point before they moved into, housing that was, they still had a house that was like big, right? And in Kansas City, and where my father-in-law had been a professor of medicine. And they actually had a separate dog kitchen in the basement where my father-in-law would go to hand prepare the dog's meals, and
fantastic.
Something delicious would be smelling up from the basement, and Bruce would be like, ooh, let's taste this for the dogs. I was like,
right.
Not for us. We're
he's ahead of his times. Who knew he could have started a business,
gourmet dog chef ahead of his time.
That's great. And so you've always been a dog lover then, Bruce.
I've always been a dog lover, what I discovered as a dog author is just how difficult it is to write from a dog's perspective. I mean, you start out and you think this is going to be fun and easy. The very first challenge is that a real dog has a vocabulary of at most 200 words. And we're not even, because we think in symbols, we're pretty sure they understand symbols. But I don't even know that if you threw a tennis ball and a beach ball on the floor and said, look at the ball, I'm not sure that the dog would understand that they were the same thing. I mean,
that they're both balls.
So that's a concept.
Interesting.
I don't think they don't need symbols, you know?
Right.
So I had to deal with the limitations, and I couldn't write it. If I wrote a book with just 200 words, vocabulary words in it, we've all read that book. It's called See Spot Run. And it's already been done, and I don't think it'd make a great movie. So I had to make up rules for myself about how to explain to a human what a dog might be thinking. That was my challenge.
Well, what I think is interesting about what we were actually talking about this earlier. So Bruce has 33 books. I don't know how many, maybe 25 of them or more are dog related.
Yeah.
Maybe. So it's a lot of books, right?
Yeah.
So I just, we decided to take all our audiobooks sort of in-house and have one or the other of us be the narrators, because readers actually like there to be a personal connection to the person that's reading them. So I had just finished recording Lacey's story, which is his latest in the Puppy Tales series. These are for middle readers. And it's the story of a dog who has a human friend who's in a wheelchair, and then through a series of circumstances, there's a boy in a wheelchair, but her person is a girl and they're best friends. And she has an accident and ends up being a dog in a cart herself. And so it's a special needs human interacting with a special needs dog interacting with the girl who is her girl. And what I loved about the book is that this unique dog point of view, you think, oh, that must be very sad for the dog, right? Like, she used to be able to run and now she's in a cart. But from the dog's point of view, everywhere that Lacey goes, she feels that she is the alpha because she is the only dog who has her own cart. Yeah. Not sad at all. And you know, the boy, Burke, who's in a wheelchair, he would never say, I'm lucky
right. Because
I get to be in a wheelchair. But Lacey thinks she's lucky because she gets to be a dog with her own cart. Like, the trauma, she has confusion about, like, how do I move around now? But once she gets the card and understands it, she's really excited. And if you ever look at a special needs dog that is in that kind of a situation,
yeah. They're
really happy. And you would totally believe that that dog feels like they're the special, most important dog because they have their own card. So I just love the way he's able to take something that we humans would see as sad. And authentically reimagine it from the dog's point of view and see that that's part of what they're here is to teach us joy, because it isn't our impulse to be that joyful. So it's a beautiful
Absolutely.
Book. Really.
It speaks to the perseverance of dogs and also their ability to just live in the moment and be like, oh, so this is happening. So here I am. I'm still the same spirit, still the same soul but I'm just doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And very happy to be doing this. And that, I think, is the greatest gift that they give us is how joyful they are, regardless of the circumstances.
My next question is, what's the most most important thing you think that the dog can teach us? And I think you're right. Yeah.
For me, that's it. I don't know. Is it different for you?
I think the most profound lesson that is given to us is very much related to what Catherine's saying, but it is with the observation that they live very short lives. And even the longest living dogs live around, you know, at most 2 decades. And that's an eyebrow raising age for a dog to pass. Well, as it turns out, we humans are also here for a very short period of time. It doesn't seem like we take that into consideration in most of our decisions, but it's actually true. And this idea that you should live every day full of joy, regardless of your challenge, regardless of your illness, regardless of anything else, that's a lesson the dogs teach us effortlessly. And it's up to us to learn that lesson, to observe and learn and say, why can't I live like a dog and be happy? I get that the weather sucks today or whatever.
Caught up in circumstances.
Yeah.
But, you know, like whenever we leave Becker down the stairs to the garage, he's like, we're going for a ride. I have no idea. You know.
Yeah, we could drive to the end of the driveway and then come back, and he would think, well, this was one of the greatest days of my life.
Yeah, as long as you're being fed and you're feeling loved and you're giving and receiving that love, it's all a really good time, seemingly.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about what's next for you as far as the books are concerned, or do you
Bruce has
coming on the horizon?
Oh, always. Yes, he has an amazing book coming out in January. You should tell her about that.
Yeah, I got a book coming out in January called Love Clancy, and it is from the point of view of a dog. The subtitle is Diary of a Good Dog. So Clancy is a little unusual for my genre, in that Clancy is probably more personified. I would say that what I try to do is write real dogs, not cartoon dogs, not talking dogs, not dogs that could communicate with cats and squirrels, but dogs thinking like dogs and having all the mystery. You know, so much stuff is mysterious to dogs, but they figure the humans will figure it out and hopefully make some bacon.
Yeah.
So that's how a dog goes through the world. Clancy's a little unusual in that. Clancy is writing a diary, and that's, you know, Tucker will like answer email, but he would never do a diary. Clancy offers us observations of what it's like to be a dog and how dogs think and have some more profound conclusions about life from the point of view of a dog.
Yeah.
And then Clancy's, as is true of all my dog characters, you know, they can see, hear, and smell. And so when human beings are talking,
The dog is like an open mic. The dog is just picking up everything that's being said. Doesn't understand it. I mean, I don't ever pretend that a dog is sitting there saying, you know, they're fighting over the fact that,
you know, tax deductible or not.
Yeah. I mean, I know Tucker cares about stuff like that, but he doesn't know when we're talking about it. So I'm really excited for it because it gives me an opportunity to kind of combine two things that I love to do. The first is to write about really funny, quirky characters, human characters, and then to write from the point of view of a dog with, you know, the dog has this dog, Clancy, has a real problem because he doesn't like the cat, and the cat lives in the house, and he thinks that's an abomination, and decides in the very early chapters of the book that his job is to eliminate the cat.
Right.
Can't come up with a plan because dogs aren't very good at that, but he's trying, and he keeps trying things. And so it's much to his dismay when his person meets a woman and the woman also has a cat, and this is looking really bad. Right. So it's a funny book. It's fun.
I have to say, I mean, as the first reader of the book, one of the things I love about it is that, you know, Bruce burst onto the scene nationally with 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter, which is a very funny book that brings the earth-shattering news to everyone that teenage girls are horrible people, which they are. They really are. But, you know, it's very funny, right? And, you know, it became a TV series and other things. But he has gotten sidelined away from that kind of human humor in the A Dog's Purpose series and the A Dog's Way Home series, because the humans just weren't as funny, really.
Yeah.
So in this book, to me, it's like Little Miss Sunshine with dogs. Like, it's a crazy group of people who end up going on a huge cross-country road trip with dogs that is, you know, very funny. All the people are very funny. And the dogs are great because they're dogs. But it's just, for me, it's really fun to see Bruce writing back in that genre where there's hilarious dialogue between the people,
right?
You know, sort of a romantic comedy kind of a vibe. And for me, that's part of the fun, is blending these two things that he does very well, which is human comedy, actual humans. Yeah. I mean, our dogs make jokes, especially in the movies.
Yeah.
But, you know, the people have never been particularly funny in any of those books. But
I would agree with that. Yeah.
And now the people are lighter and funnier and having romantic drama, you know, so it's really a fun
book. That's Love, Clancy, and that'll be out in January. I've got another children's book series that I'm starting up. I've got that one is called Dogs with a Purpose. And it's, the first one is about a water rescue dog.
Well, they're working dogs.
They're working dogs. Yeah. Okay. So it's different than my puppy tales, which are, you know, sometimes working, but most of the time they're not working. And then I have this Lily to the Rescue series, which is for the youngest readers in my my library, or whatever you want to call it. And they are, those books are short, lots of illustrations. And it's about a rescue dog who works and lives at an animal rescue and helps rescue baby animals. And it's, you know, it's a delight. The children, the young kids really love the Lily to the Rescue series. So I've got 2 more of those. One will be out at the end of next year, and one will be out the following year. And so and that will make a total of 8 for the series so far.
And one of the things I love about the Lily series is that she's a pit bull, or pit bull mix, probably, if you look at the illustration. And yet she's an empath animal, which is something that actually happens in rescues, where there are just some animals. My stepdaughter, Georgia, has had this experience where there's some animals that are just so gentle and so empathetic that they can comfort a new feral kitten that's come into the rescue, or whatever, you know, is put in front of them. They just have such a easy demeanor that they can help socialize that animal. And that's what Lily is. And we're very against breed specific legislation. Yeah. That's something we've worked with people like Best Friends and I think the thing that we have accomplished that I'm the most proud of with any of these properties is what happened with A Dog's Way Home in regards to the pit bull thing. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, yeah, because A Dog's Way Home deals with the dog, Shelby, who plays Bella. Bella is, as A Dog's Way Home and then the sequel A Dog's Courage describes, Bella is a dog that may have some pit bull. It's very difficult. Right. You don't see her as a typical pit bull, neither on the cover image or in the movie. Yeah. But because of the way the Denver law was written, and I'm using the past tense for a very deliberate reason, but because of the way the law was written, if three animal control officers pointed to a dog and said, that's a pit bull, that was a pit bull. So it meant that, you know, you could point to a dachshund and say, that's a pit bull. And there's no appeal. There's no dog court. So
and to be clear, if they determine that, they could destroy the dog.
Yeah. It's a one strike and you're out kind of thing. If they pick up the dog, there's a $175 fine and a notice. That if they pick up your dog again, it'll be euthanized. Yeah. No appeal. You can, of course, go to court and file a lawsuit and take 6 months while your dog's being held in a shelter and try to free your dog. And I'm sure you would prevail ultimately because it's not really in the city's interest to put your dog down. The most important thing is this movie, A Dog's Courage, came out. Dog's Way Home. Sorry. I'm pitching the scene. With some kind of dog book, but it came out and there was like a backlash in Denver. The city council passed they repealed the law, and the mayor vetoed the repeal. So they put it on the ballot, and overwhelmingly the people in Denver,
like over 60%,
voted to repeal this breed discrimination. And I think that I can say very confidently that the movie and the book was no small part of this.
Well, I mean, Georgia, you know, people were door knocking and they would, you know, just to campaign to try to repeal this law. And they would say, do you know about the, you know, pit bull ban in Denver? Yeah. Like, oh yeah, we saw that movie. Good.
It's all about representation, right? And knowledge. So if you're seeing, you know, a friendly, loving dog. I mean, my dog is, you wouldn't know it by looking at him, but he's 55% Staffordshire Terrier, right?
Oh wow! Yeah.
So he's people say he's a pit bull in sheep's clothing because then he has like long wiry hair. So yeah. He really has the body of a pit bull, but no one ever thinks of that. And then when I tell them that, they get a little like confused. But he is the most docile, like loving. You know, he is like the leader of all of the dogs. Like he nurtures everybody in there, and he's never met a dog he didn't like, you know? And so it's really great that you were able to, like, you know, put that representation out there and so people can see it. Because people just don't know. Mostly people just don't know.
They don't know. And it's and as you know, it's how the dog is handled. And I know chihuahuas that'll, you know, bitch slap you for it's looking at him sideways or whatever, you know. It's complicated.
Well, thank you for that movie and thank you for doing that work, because clearly you made a difference.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't very many times, you know, people in show business are very sanctimonious. We believe we make a movie about something, we can save the world, and it's mostly not. It was the one instance, although I would say all three movies have raised some consciousness about rescue, and that's another thing. We care very much about. So that's a good feeling as well.
People often ask me, you know, what message do you want people to get from your books? And it's an easy answer. I want people to understand that dogs are feeling, sentient, even spiritual beings. Mm-hmm. And also that they're reliant on us. We can't, there are some cats you can open the front door and say, go fend for yourself and they'll be just fine. But you can't do that with a dog. Yeah. You never see a vicious pack of dachshunds bringing down a wildebeest. It's not going to happen. We bred these dogs for very specific purposes and it was always to serve us. And now we owe it to them to protect them from because we've defanged them, at least figuratively, because they don't have the instincts anymore to fend for themselves. And so I think the saddest thing to see is a homeless dog, because that dog needs people. That's been bred into them more than anything else, more than retrieving, more than hunting rats, more than all of that. What was bred into them was a dependence upon humans. So I want everyone who reads my books to understand they are like our children. They were the first domesticated animal, and they are the most reliant on us as opposed to any other domesticated animal.
Yeah.
And it's fun because between the books and the movies, this is I call it the Bruceiverse. It's a universe of entertainment and literature that really can be enjoyed by, 6 to 106, and it's stories that we hope, create that consciousness in kids, and sometimes, raise the consciousness of adults. I mean, my own mother we never had dogs as a family, and she's scared of them, or she wasn't raised to have dogs. And then she's read all the books, and she said, I finally get it. Like, now I get why people want dogs, and I like being around dogs more from reading the books. And I'm like, well, that's great, because although she's kind of an outlier, I think more people like dogs than don't. The idea that someone could be moved to feel more affectionate towards dogs because of that is great.
Yeah.
Is that what you think why you think the books resonate so well with people? Just because you're really giving them a glimpse into the soul. I mean, I know why they resonate with me, because you're giving me a glimpse into the vulnerability, the soul, the humor, all the things of these little creatures that are,
cohabitating with us. I interact with the fan base a lot. Because I handle a lot of our social media and whatnot. And the thing that people always say is, like, I feel now like I understand my dog. I feel like I know what they might be thinking and how they think. And so I feel so much closer to my dog. And, like Bryce Dallas Howard was a good example. She was the voice of Bella in A Dog's Way Home. And we didn't plan it this way, but Josh Gad, who is the voice of the dog in A Dog's Purpose. They're the closest of friends, and Josh is the godfather to Bryce's kids. And anyway, so because of that, Bryce was very familiar with A Dog's Purpose. And when they had lost a pet, their kids were old enough that she and her husband had the kids watch A Dog's Purpose, not because Uncle Josh is the voice, but because she felt that it would help them deal with the loss. And it did. And she shared that with us when she was, when we were all doing media for the movie together. And that's like so moving, because it's like, here's a tool where your whole family can talk about this eternal relationship that we believe we have with this pet soul that we've lost, and know that the last thing that dog would have wanted would be for us to have another dog. That's their worry about us. What if they're gone and then we don't have a dog anymore?
I had a session with an animal intuitive once, and she jumped in to say that your dog just really wants you to know that not to worry, because he shows up every time you need him, every lifetime. So my friend and I have a joke that he's like up there having a grand old time, and then he gets a memo. He's like, oh, she's making bad choices. I gotta go, you guys. I'll be back in a bit. When is she gonna figure it out?
Oh my God, that's great. I think that fits my view of it.
That's kind of the through line, the plot line of A Dog's Journey, the sequel to A Dog's Purpose, is that CJ makes bad decisions.
Yeah. Dog can't go to anyone else. Yeah. Has to keep coming back.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
All right, you guys, do you have anything that you want to add? This has been so lovely, but I don't want to take up too much of your time.
Well, no, I just thank you for doing the kind of podcasting where people can talk about, you know, these things and being animal advocates in a healthy, angry way. we like to present a positive view of that because we want a bigger tent. You know, we don't want just we have tons of friends who are vegans and that's amazing. But we don't want people to feel that, you know, there's only one way to be an animal advocate and that there's anybody who would consider rescuing a dog. A lot of people don't know that if you're hung up on a certain breed, that there are breed rescues. There are a lot of ways to be involved as a loving pet owner and be an animal advocate. Yeah. And yes, you can have a doodle. And yes, you can, you know, like, that's all out there. And we just want to educate people about that. So we're just really grateful that you're doing that kind of podcasting. It's an honor to be part of it.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, that's the vision for this podcast, is really to just create awareness around all things dog. So people can feel okay about talking about the love of their dog. People can feel okay talking about rescue. People can feel okay talking about loss, pet loss, all of the things, you know? So,
yeah, it's really important. And then I think once, you know, Tucker's going to betray me. He's 12. He's lying comfortably on the sofa, but one day he will betray me and I will rescue another dog because I do believe that's what he would want. And it's what I want. Right. You know, I want to be that person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a Labrador die, and then I went 4 years without adopting a dog.
Oh my gosh.
Very similar to the motivation behind Catherine's statement in the car.
Yeah.
It's like, I just don't think I can do that again.
I've heard that a lot.
Then when Tucker came into our lives, I thought, why did I wait?
Yeah.
I had forgotten the good stuff. I'd forgotten just how wonderful a dog's love can be.
Some would say you're waiting for Tucker. Yeah.
Tucker
would say that.
Yeah.
I saved you from all those inferior dogs.
Yes.
That you
would
have had.
That's fantastic. Yeah, my guy's 15, and I have not personally experienced pet loss other than when my dog growing up. But apparently, I don't have to worry because he's coming back every lifetime. So you know,
I love that. I don't disbelieve that.
Right. Yeah. All right, you guys, thank you so much. And enjoy your trip wherever you're going. I know you're about to head out.
We're in the mountains of Colorado, and it couldn't be more lovely. Every day just looks like a beer commercial here.
Gosh,
it's like an eagle flies over and a moose walks up. And it's nuts. It's
and you brought
beautiful.
Tucker with you, I'm assuming? Or does he?
Yes, and he loves it. Although you did run across a fox.
They're not. Yeah. Scary.
He doesn't see the fox. He doesn't smell the fox.
I don't see no stinking fox.
Any creature larger than he is, who's not a dog, he doesn't register that they are alive. He just ignores them.
That's great.
Yeah, he doesn't want to mess with a cow or anything. But but you get him you run a squirrel across a path and he goes into full hunter mode.
Yep.
Though he doesn't understand when they climb a tree, he gives me this look like, is that even allowed? Can they do that?
How dare he? Yeah.
And as you know, the trees in Southern California very often have these great big thick limbs very close to the ground.
Yeah.
And Tucker was chasing a squirrel and the squirrel hopped up into that tree and Tucker followed got up two limbs and then froze and looked at me like, now what? I'm like, well, you're not supposed to be climbing trees. You're a dog.
Did you get him? Did he come right back down or did he fall down and you had to grab him?
I had to grab him.
He has people for that.
Yeah, right. For that, yeah. You're the support team. You're a support team. You're always ready.
Yes. He doesn't do that himself.
That's so cute. All right, well, enjoy your vacation.
Thank you, Charlotte. Bye-bye.
That was such a fun chat. And thank you so much for listening to the Beru Podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, please don't forget to rate and follow the Beru Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at Beru Pet. If you have a canine behavior question or a canine health question or a story of canine companionship that you want to share on the Beru Podcast, you can email me, charlotte@theberu.com. I would love to hear from you. All right, you guys, let's chat next week.